This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, 877-217-5757 is your number, and talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. We always enjoy hearing from the most enlightened audience in radio, and one of our favorite guests, George Morris, is with us, who writes for The Advocate. I met him many years ago as a sports writer. He arrived in town in 1982 working for the State Times, and that was the last time he was on this show when we talked about the 30th anniversary of the State Times going out of business. But George segued to the Morning Advocate. He covered LSU for a while, and now he writes about everything, including LSU. And he is a great historian. And today, before we get to matters of contemporary relevance, is the 34th anniversary of the death of one Pete Maravich, greatest scorer in LSU history and in college basketball history, 3,667 points, 83 games at LSU. That's 44.2 points a game in an era when there was no three-point play and no shot clock. The teams actually held the ball to keep him from scoring, and he still racked up an average of more than 44 points a game in 3 years at LSU. And I remember going to his funeral at George's Church downtown.
First Baptist Church.
Beautiful church, by the way. One of the most beautiful in this city or any city. And I was seated next to George, and I think on the other side of me was the veteran sports writer Marty Mule. And Marty knew Pete very well, the late Marty Mule. But George, Pete Maravich, all these years later, still is not in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame. And their board of supervisors several years ago voted for a statue of him to be put beside Shaquille O'Neal and Bob Pettit. It is the Pete Maravich Assembly Center. And the statue has been completed, but it's in mothballs. Somebody doesn't like Pete all these years later. That is hard to fathom.
Well, you just told me that before the show, and it was first I'd known of it. And I find that completely inexplicable. If someone does have any kind of issue with Pete, he's been gone 34 years. It's time to move on.
And to my knowledge, he was never charged with any serious crime. He had a substance abuse issue, but as do many others. And at the end of his life, he was a devout Christian, and he was proselytizing and doing it in a very convincing way. And he died playing basketball with a minister, James Dobson, in Pasadena, California, 34 years ago today. And why they would blackball him all these years later is mysterious.
Well, it is. And you know, I'm just spitballing here. But, I mean, the only thing I can speculate is, of course, after Pete graduated, and a year or two later they fired.
He didn't graduate, by the way.
Well, I'm sorry. He finished his basketball career at LSU, and then they fired his dad as head coach. And you know, Pete was sort of estranged from LSU, you know, for most of his adult life. I don't think he ever spoke badly about LSU, but you know, he was never there. I remember when I was still a sports writer, they brought him back, and you know, they introduced him, I think, before a game at courtside. Of course, he got a big ovation, but maybe there's some resentment of the fact that, you know, he just completely sort of stayed away from LSU. I don't know.
And he was a poor student. But today, I was talking with John Brady, the former basketball coach, the other night, and I don't think John would mind me repeating what he said. He said, the Academic Center for Athletes is pretty much passé now with, you know, name, image, likeness, and players leaving. All of these players today, like, go down the list. Odell Beckham, now Burrow graduated because he was one of those rarities who actually stayed in college for 5 years. But he's the exception. Patrick Peterson, the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu. None of those players graduated, so LSU, and they're giving pretty big money to LSU, too. So they're going to have a real problem for keeping people who don't have college degrees out of the Athletic Hall of Fame at some point.
Yeah, that's a rule I suspect will change.
And I suspect, too. And there are people in there who don't have college degrees, and yet they have not been removed, and that is the stated issue for keeping Pete out. But Pete Maravich died 34 years ago. He was only 40 years old. Think about that, 40 years old. If he were alive today, he would be younger than the President of the United States.
True, and I distinctly remember that. Of course, I when that happened, and immediately I run into coverage mode, and I remember frantically driving up to the airport because LSU was flying up to Nashville that day to play Vanderbilt the next day in basketball, and I knew that Marty Broussard, the longtime trainer, the legendary trainer of LSU athletics, would be there and would know Pete, and ran up there to grab an interview, and. It was shocking. It's like, you know, almost for sports fans, it's almost equivalent to Elvis.
Yeah,
you know,
no doubt, no doubt. And he was a figure of great cultural significance and had that style like Elvis, the floppy socks, and he was revered in arenas across the Southeast, in which opposing players generally were not cheered, but. Once in Georgia, he had a shot at the buzzer as he was just dribbling and running out of time, a hook shot from the midcourt, and they gave him a standing ovation.
Well, I mean, he was a phenomenon. I mean, when you talked about his stats, I think he's the best college basketball player in history. I mean, he didn't have the great pro career that when we think of the LeBrons and Michael Jordans and Kobe's and all that, but he was amazing, and it wasn't just that he was so much physically more gifted than everyone else. He developed skills with ball handling and passing, as well as shooting, that remain unparalleled.
Well, I remember reading his autobiography written with Phil Pepe, by the way, who I'm sure wrote most of the book. But he said as a kid, his dad had played in the NBA, by the way, too, at 6 feet tall, and that was probably stretching it. And Press Maravich became the head coach at LSU. He coached Pete, and he owned three fried chicken franchises here called Press Maravich's Maryland Fried Chicken. But independent of that, his dad told him to hang from a door frame, and that would make him taller. So he would spend about an hour a day hanging from a door frame, and sure enough, he became 6'5". But quite likely, he was just abnormally tall, and that, of course, meant, as sometimes happens, he had an enlarged heart. And even though he was a substance abuser, it was the enlarged heart that killed him and killed him instantly in Pasadena on this date in 1988.
Really sad.
And we're going to talk about the Dale Brown Court, LSU beating Kentucky last night, 65-60. Well, it's always a big thing when LSU beats Kentucky. And by the way, one of the accomplishments, some might say his greatest accomplishment for Dale Brown, no coach ever beat Kentucky more than he. 18 times he defeated the University of Kentucky in his 25 years. And last night the court was named in his honor. And, oh, by the way, the football team closed a dismal season, finishing 6-7, losing 42-20 in the Texas Bowl in Houston against mighty Kansas State. And Brian Kelly was not the coach. Brad Davis was on the sidelines, but LSU apparently has some making up to do to get back where it was 2 years ago. And it was 2 years ago, January 13th, when the whole world was cheering Joe Burrow and the Tigers, considered the greatest team in college history. And now, since then, they have 11 wins and 12 losses. Tim and Thibodeau, you're on with George Morris. Good morning, Tim.
Thank you so much. You have answered most of my questions already. But I just want you to know I tutored Pete at Broussard Hall, and the floppy socks and all, and he handed me his paper, and he was in developmental everything, you know, English 1A, so on and so on. I asked him, why in the world, because he only had two very minor errors on the paper. Well, Dad, our coach told me to do this so I could keep my grades, you know. And I just find it interesting that such a marvelous guy and such a scorer, I think what you said about his passing, I remember going to the John Q. Parker Coliseum and getting some of his teammates knocked on their sides because he was blind passing to everybody coming down court. Just a complete phenomenon.
Yes, indeed. And solely devoted to basketball. And as mentioned, late in his life, he had a religious conversion and met a woman who he was very compatible with, who shared that devotion to a higher power, Jackie, and he left her a widow at a young age. And Pete Maravich is still revered 51 years later. And George, 52 years since he scored his last basket. And that record has stood all these years.
Well, again, I mean, he's the best basketball player in college of all time. I mean, he, you know, I mean, you can look at some modern players that had great aspects of his game, like, such as Larry Bird, who, in addition to being a great shooter, was a great passer. But the dribbling skills that Pete added to that, I mean, he was the complete package.
He was indeed. 6'5", by the time he matured, about 200 pounds when he was at LSU, probably about 170. But he was a force to be reckoned with, and we'll talk about a bit more with George Morris when we return after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. George Morris, 40 years ago, he arrived in Baton Rouge after a newspaper in Tampa went out of business. And it was Tampa, right?
Correct.
And that's a beautiful city. And it was evolving. You could have had a great life there. You ended up having a great life here. But you came to Baton Rouge, and he has been a treasure. And he's also taught at the Manship School for the last 8 years. And for those of us who follow sports, this is a 40-year anniversary this year, but it's actually his 41st year. You know, people, they don't get that sometimes unless they follow it, but it is your 41st calendar year. 82 through 22 would be 41, even though you're 40 years is an anniversary, and that's a long time to spend in one place.
Well, it is, and it's been a good place. Again, you know, I came here, you know, having never been to Baton Rouge before, and just really have enjoyed it. Obviously, it has a great sports culture. It has a great, you know, just multi-ethnic, multilingual, you know, melting pot kind of culture. It's been a great place to be.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org as we round the corner with George Morris. And as I mentioned, George has become the preeminent military historian in our state. And that website again.
www.thebigoneone.com.
www.thebigoneone.com.
Yeah, well, okay. www.ww2thebigone.com.
Okay, gotcha. Now, a few weeks ago, he wrote a story, and some would call this fluff, but I found it fascinating. And lo and behold, there's a picture of Nick Saban's old house that he bought on Highland Road for $1.7 million. At that time, it was one of the most expensive homes in Baton Rouge, but we are talking almost 20 years ago. This was the second house he lived in, and Brian Kelly has a $1.2 million housing allowance. It's an interest-free loan, and in addition to being paid almost $120 million over the course of the next 10 years if he hits all his marks. And you note that the evolution of coaches has prompted a change in the real estate market. I remember Dale Brown lived on Blecher Drive in Westminster, middle-class home. Charlie McClendon lived on Menlo Drive out around Kenilworth,
right.
Middle-class home. No gates, open lots, free access. Their names were in the phone book. In the student directory, I was surprised when I became a student there. There was not only their address, but their home phone number. And I remember calling Charlie back, hello. Today, people, it's harder actually to find people today in the age of the phones we have than it was then. But Kelly, do we know where he's moved?
I don't. I mean, I have not. I mean, I wrote the story again. It was at the time we were just sort of wondering where it might be. I don't know if he has settled on a permanent location. I mean, if you're going to have a $1.2 million housing allowance, obviously, there are only a few standing houses you can buy, and you know, whether he chooses to build something for himself.
Well, a listener says, and this could be right or wrong, that he is living in the Bocage area, and that would be a nice area. We do have some very nice places to live in Baton Rouge. And at one time, River Bend was the place, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Matter of fact, the just as you entered River Bend subdivision, I think like two houses down, Marino Kasem, who was Southern's athletic director, a couple of houses down from him was Bill Arnsparger, LSU's football coach, and a couple of houses down from him was Bob Broadhead, LSU's athletic director. And as you mentioned before, I don't know if they were listed in the phone book. I don't remember that. But again, not a gated yard, not a gated community. You know, they were very accessible in ways that that coaches aren't.
In those days, we had phone directories that we used to find people. And I remember Arnsparger's name was not in the phone directory. He was the first coach. But if you called directory assistance and asked for William Arnsparger on River Bend, you got a number.
Right.
Now, Broadhead played a little game, but I figured it out and got his home number. He was listed in the phone directory under the name Jason Roberts. I don't know where he got that. His son was named Jason. Maybe that was it. But but he was Bob Broadhead, a.k.a. Jason Roberts. And that was Bob, but they all lived in River Bend, and that's a nice area, and it's close to LSU, as we know.
Right.
But now University Club, I think, has become the place where King Alexander lived several others at LSU in high places. So the new president, William Tate, has chosen to live on campus, as he should, I think. And it is, quote, free housing, so why not?
Right.
And Governor Edwards, when we had the flood in 2016, he lived there, and he's liked it so much that he didn't want to leave, but it's apparently in the Constitution that the governor has to live in the mansion. So he had to move back to the mansion. But that's not a bad area there on Lakeshore Drive, George.
Oh, no, it's gorgeous. I mean, just the living on water is a nice ambiance.
Well, you found a realtor who knew all the history about the coaches, and I'm impressed. Saban bought a $1 million home in Woodgate Estates, stayed there a year, then bought a $1.7 million home on Highland Road. And I do remember when WAFB did a story on that, he called the news director, and he says, "Now everybody will know where I live." He was not happy about that. But these guys are into their privacy. And with these phones, it's hard to be private. Yesterday I had a listener send me a photo of one, John Calipari, the coach of Kentucky, mm-hmm. one of the best and highest paid coaches. He makes $10 million a year, by the way, to coach the basketball team at Kentucky. But he was at Mass at 8 o'clock at St. Aloysius, and that's interesting that he chose to go to Mass and probably said some prayers, but if he prayed for the Wildcats to win, the Lord didn't answer them. But there is that zone of privacy that I think is important, and we have the era of the imperial coach, and it's changed things. It may change how they react, how they interact with people.
Well, I think it certainly has changed how they act and interact. But again, I mean, when you think of how much money they make, I mean, you talked about Brian Kelly, you know, that if he hits all his marks, maybe $120 million in 10 years. I'm not sure that Charlie McClendon made a six-figure salary.
I don't think he did.
Right. Now, and I realize that.
And his buyout was 1 year, $90,000, I think. But, you know, Woody Hayes won five national titles at Columbus, Ohio State University, and because of business, I've been to Columbus a few times in the last few years, and I always make a point of going by his home in a very nice neighborhood. It is a nice neighborhood, and usually neighborhoods drive the prices up, and it's near campus, and I'm pulling it up. I know the address, 1711 Cardiff Road, and it's, you know, the house today is worth $445,000. That's it. That's right. It. Woody Hayes did not live in splendor, and he won five national titles. And last time I checked, Brian Kelly's searching for number one.
Right. Well, it is a different era, it's a different economy, and that how the television money that has funneled into college athletics has driven all that, and it's a different world.
It is a different world as far as how journalists cover. I know you're not on the beat anymore, but when these people are in a different class. And class in America means a lot. It has to affect perhaps how they react with these people who are journalists who still don't make the big money that coaches do.
Right. Well, I mean, there is that difference. I don't know how much that, you know, that really has a major effect. I mean, the fact is that that sort of the legacy traditional media don't have nearly as much power as, you know, influence as they did before, because coaches can tweet to millions of followers and so forth.
And Mary Patricia Ray, graduate of the University in Columbus, reminds me that it's not Ohio State University. It's
the United States. Oh, my goodness.
I think we should start calling LSU the Louisiana State University. And George Morris. The George Morris. Let's bring the George Morris back very soon. Always fun to talk with you. Thank you, George. We'll be back. We'll talk about a hot topic, tipping, when we return. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing and it was in 2020 that we had a show late in the year on the etiquette of tipping, and then we kind of skirted around the issue a bit a few weeks ago when we had Megan Musso, one of the most remarkable people in Baton Rouge, 29 years young, and the general manager of Sullivan's. And we have two guests here who have logged some significant time in the service industry, who have some thoughts about it, and of course I know our listeners do too, and sometimes we just don't know. For example, when people move your belongings from one town to another, it's appropriate to tip the driver and all the others, and some people don't even know that, and sometimes it's just an error of omission rather than commission. But we'd like to hear from you, 877-217-5757. And knowing how to tip has always been stressful. There are really no set rules. We're left guessing how to convert service quality into cash, but the COVID-19 pandemic has increased the confusion. Many workers who normally survive on tips, like waitstaff, hotel clerks, bartenders, they lost this part of their income when they no longer serve customers in person. And it is a new era. And yet, people who work in the service industry often earn $2.13 an hour. That's the minimum wage for service workers in most states, including Louisiana. And they rely heavily on tips. So if we don't tip, they could even go in the hole because they have to tip others who work with them. So we'd like to get your take. And we're joined by Rodnina Hart. We've been with her a few times. She is an executive with the state of Louisiana now, running four state museums, works with Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, and Azalea Miller, who has worked as a service person for many years. She's in her early 30s, and I guess she started when she was a teenager and has made a living doing this at several different locations. And I met her many years ago when she was working at Churchill's. 877-217-5757. And Rodnina, I met when she was a server for many years at Louis. And we'll start with you, Rodnina, who is joining us remotely. She had intended to be in studio with Azalea, but she has been exposed to COVID and is doing the right thing and joining us remotely. Rodnina, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. Very happy to talk with everyone.
Well, you started early in your career relying on this industry, and it's a tough industry, isn't it?
It absolutely is difficult. You know, you put so much work in, you put so much love into your customers, and you try your hardest to make sure that everyone's happy and satisfied, and all they're thinking about is the conversation that they're having with their loved one, and, you know, how delicious this meal is, and that your actions there are effortless, and also that it's something where you're not intrusive, but also you want to make sure that people are satisfied. So it's a dance. It's a really wonderful way of serving people.
And when you rely on tips, if you're at a place like Chris's Steakhouse, where a bill will regularly run $100, $200, and you're getting 20%, that could be $40. But when you're at Louis, and it might be $10, yeah. $10, it certainly is important at the very least to tip 20%, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, I like to remind people these days that you are making up from $2.13 to a livable wage for that individual. And the time that they spend on you, especially, you know, in a service industry where the whole meal is $10, if you can be generous, be generous. It's absolutely never going to be a bad thing to overtip. You know, the standard now is between 18 and 20%. I say always do 20%. And that should just be your minimum. Just remember that you are the difference between them paying a bill or not.
Right.
And it really, yeah, it changes things.
Well, Azalea's been absorbing what you have to say, and we will go to the phone lines in just a moment. Again, there is a line open, 877-217-5757. But Azalea, you've worked in bars, and of course, sometimes when people's inhibitions are reduced, they may even tip more, but some people don't believe 20% is necessary. If you order a beer or a cocktail, what are your thoughts about tipping in places that serve alcoholic beverages?
Well, whenever you're ordering a beer, and a beer might be $3.25, $3.50, depends on where it is.
Or more.
Or more. You could be downtown in New Orleans and think about that. That might be $5.50 for a beer.
And some places in Washington, I just had one, and it was $10.
But... yeah. Oh, Vegas. Vegas. Think about Vegas. But, you know, it depends on your finances. And also, if you want to be generous, go ahead and be generous. But I do believe that it would be fair to tip, because you have to understand, again, we only make $2.13 an hour. So, like she said, 20% is good. 18 to 20, I agree.
But sometimes people don't tip. Sometimes people
tip. But you know what? You can't get mad at that, because all you're doing is serving a drink. You're serving food. You're bringing it out.
It might affect how you work with others.
No, not for me.
Okay.
And that's, everybody is different. Because me being in this industry, working in restaurants with younger people who harp on, oh, well, this person didn't tip me, and then they want to give crappy service. And it's like, no, you can't do that. Just keep treating people the same way, and you know, you'll make your money. You'll make your living. And that's how I've done it.
All right. 877-217-5757. George in Convent, Louisiana. George, you're on with Azalea Miller and Rodnina Hart. Hi, George.
Yes. I have, if I get bare minimum service, they get 15. If they go a little bit, and I have, it goes up a scale. If I get excellent service, I've given up to 40%.
Mm. All right.
But so. I'd urge other people to, if you have friends that don't tip, because I have a friend of mine, he has a PhD in chemistry, and we used to work together, and he would, and we'd go places he wouldn't tip, and I said, dude, you're not going to tip? He's going, well, hell, if they want to make more money, they ought to get a better job. And I was kind of like, what?
Yeah, well.
So I'd end up tipping for him. And I've also tipped for people who got up and walked off and didn't leave a tip.
I've seen married couples leave a restaurant, and it's usually the woman. She looks at the bill and sees that her husband has under-tipped, and reaches into her purse and leaves a few more dollars. So she wanted to do the right thing for people who are in this age, in addition to everything else, on the front lines, literally. They're more susceptible to getting COVID, and they have to deal with difficult people on occasion. 877-217-5757. Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, you're on with Azalea Miller and Rodnina Hart. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. About 87, I was between jobs, and I drove car service in Ozone Park, New York. And the best tippers I had were waitresses, and the Gambinos at time. But I say my message is tip big or stay home.
All right. Do waitresses generally tip better than others?
Yeah. Yes, because we understand.
Yeah. Rodnina, since
I've had a mix where it was they know exactly what they expect, and sometimes if you don't live up to that, you hear the wrath. But ultimately, people in service industry, they understand the social contract that we've all entered into. If you go to a restaurant, there's an assumption that you are going to tip. It is the way that we work in America. Other countries are different. Other industries are different. But there's a lot of buying into people and individual experiences that you invest in. And like I like to think of these as like small investments in this interaction or this relationship.
I want to say something about that. When you said in other countries it's different, in China, it's rude to tip.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why, but it's very rude to tip in China.
Right, well, it's not in the U.S.
It's just social custom. Yeah.
In Europe, a lot of the tipping is not done because it's built into the bill. And in some places, there's an automatic gratuity. And I've seen people yell and scream about that when it's a party of a certain amount of people.
And it changed. Yeah. It's recently changed.
All right. We've got Will on South Harrell's Ferry. Will, you're on with Rodnina and Azalea.
Yes, I couldn't agree wholeheartedly more on what she said, because sometimes when you go to places, it's like waitress have attitude. I went to Walmart. If you could tip people at Walmart, some of those people at Walmart are so outstanding. I feel like getting them $25, and I don't care.
But it's
your attitude you have. And I don't think they would refuse your money, Will.
I think they'd take your money. But thank you, Will. Thank you. Okay, Bill downtown. Bill, you're on. Good morning, Bill.
I was going to ask about the automatic gratuity, if you want to have anything or follow up on that. But I also wanted to say I recently took an Amtrak trip to the East Coast and back, and I always make sure I tip the car attendants, and I'm surprised how many people I see that don't.
Mm.
Yeah, well, that's important.
Yeah.
Randy and Zachary. Well, let's see if we can get Randy and Zachary in under the wire before the break. And Randy, good morning to you, sir.
Yes, the food service people really work hard. I have two nieces that did that for quite a while, and they did quite well at it.
Well, thank you, Randy. 877-217-5757. We'll pick up on this when we return. How much should we tip? Should we ever not tip? We'll talk more with Rodnina Hart and Azalea Miller. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. And invariably, when we discuss tipping, people get excited because it's something that we are out and about. We all encounter the experience whether we should tip, and if we do, how much? And is it appropriate to go below or way above? 877-217-5757. Rodnina Hart, who runs four state museums for the state of Louisiana, spent more than a few years serving me and others at Louis, and always did so with that engaging smile of hers. She is with us, and Azalea Miller, who worked for several years at Churchill's, and I didn't know, you told me you worked 13 years at Hooters?
Yes.
How was that?
A learning experience. Lovely. I don't regret it. I learned a lot working there because I started at an early age and traveled around working at different Hooters. So it was
How were you able to handle unruly patrons? I imagine there were a few of those.
You step away, take a breather, and go back and just be nice and deal with it. Don't be rude. Don't be, you know, mad. Just deal with it.
Most of the patrons there, I guess, were men. Most, but not all.
Mostly men with companies and, you know, group meetings and stuff. So, yeah.
Which brings us to a question from a listener. And by the way, you can send emails at talk@talklouisiana.org. Or give us a call. We do have some lines open now at 877-217-5757. 5-7, but this is a question from Kelly downtown asking whether men or women are generally better tippers. Azalea?
I'm going to say 50-50. So when there is a couple, I always engage with the woman so she doesn't feel like I'm engaging with her husband or boyfriend, you know.
Yeah.
And you cater to her more.
And Rodnita?
I found that nice people tip well, and that was indiscriminate of if they were male or female.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, if they are engaged, if they're having a good experience, if they're partying and everyone's happy, then they generally are generous people.
Yeah.
And people who don't tip, I think sometimes we generally think they're not nice.
Maybe they just don't know.
They don't know.
Well, they're ignorant.
Where have they been living? What? Go ahead, Ronita.
I don't know. I feel like it's kind of the do you put your buggy back kind of situation. Like people who don't tip well or don't feel that it's a significant part of this cultural exchange, I find that they are just not as exuberant about life often, or that they are not putting the kind of value into the people who are serving them. And so maybe they think more of themselves, or maybe, but like it's never an equitable experience whenever there's a person who doesn't feel that they need to tip.
I like the way you put that. I agree with that.
Well, the game is evolving, and food service tips have moved beyond gratuities for waitstaff. They now include tips for pickup. Now, I had a manners expert on once, it's not been that long ago, 5 or 6 years ago, said you didn't have to pick or tip for a pickup order, but now it's insulting if you don't, right?
Yeah. I mean, would you tip on a Lyft?
Yeah.
I figure if you're doing a service and I have the money to pay for this service, then I include gratuity. I am just appreciative that people are doing things for me that I don't have to do for myself. You're cooking for me here. I'm very happy to give you a few extra dollars. You're delivering my groceries. That's amazing. That saves so much time of my life. And I want to be an appreciative person. I want to show that I understand that you're taking of your time in your life to accommodate for something I need or want. And there's nothing wrong with being generous towards that.
And a listener, this is Hal in Monroe's asking about tipping now through other ways than cash. People use PayPal even to tip now, don't they?
Yeah.
That's right.
What would you
prefer? So many different services. Cash is always
cash good. Is better.
You want cash. Cash never goes out of style, does it?
That is so true.
All right. 877-217-5757 in our remaining time with Rodnita Hart and Azalea Miller. Jeff in New Orleans. Jeff, you're on Talk
Hi there.
Louisiana.
I have a couple of points. I spent a few years during college waiting tables, and kind of like the required military, I think it would be a good idea if the country had people wait tables for a couple of years, because it's a very learning experience. But as, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I like that.
I agree.
And I like that.
The second point I want to make, because it's just a really learning experience, and the money's great, and the schedule's great. It really is. For people of that age, it's just a really wonderful job. And like the one guest said, with Hooters, you could go anywhere in the country with a corporate restaurant. But my second point is, it's very important. What people don't realize is you can tip the waiter or waitress and have a wonderful experience. Or if the whole system changed, you could pay for expensive food and have a terrible experience. Because we're working as servers for the people, so that's where we make our money. We don't make our money from the company. But if everybody stopped tipping, then restaurant owners would have to raise their prices to get workers, and then the workers would be working for the restaurant, and there would be no reason for them to take care of the customer.
All right.
So you pay.
Thank you.
There's only a 3-5% markup for restaurants. They're not making money hand over fist by selling the food at the prices they do. So there's that part that we are picking up as the customer. And again, it's that contract between the customer and that server. And it's a great thing. Ensures great and prompt service.
Well, here's an etiquette list of some tipping expectations. Hotel housekeeping, $1 to $3 a night plus $5 for any extra services. Valets, $5 to $10. Bellhop, $2 to $3 per bag and $5 for room delivery. A doorman, $5 to $20 for your doorman. So if you tip well, you're going to end up having to pay a little bit, but that's what you...
It's convenience.
Well, and usually you get good service when you tip well.
Right.
But dine-in restaurant, 15 to 20% of total check, 15 for mediocre service, 20 for exceptional. Restaurant takeout. Go ahead.
We make it easy in Baton Rouge or in Louisiana since our taxes are 10%. You just double that. Makes it easy.
Yeah, I agree.
There are a lot of people. They do that. Here, Lyft, Uber, and other drivers, minimum of 15 to 20% of the bill.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. House cleaners, 15 to 20% of the bill. That 15, 20% is pretty much universal. Here is personal trainers for fitness clubs, $10 to $20 per visit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. Hairstylist, 15 to 20%.
Oh, yes.
All right.
Yes, that's your image.
Massage therapist.
That's the one to take good care of you.
15% for a massage therapist. And I asked about, or I mentioned movers, $20 a person, $50 for a supervisor. So, yeah, it's appropriate to tip movers and Amazon drivers, $5 to $20 in cash in an envelope if the delivery is extra large. Now, mail carriers, no tip on individual deliveries, but small holiday gifts are okay. Gifts should be under $50 per year. So, now, what about tips? Do you ever get flowers or candy or anything like that?
Like the fruit thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When I got married, my hairdresser she went above and beyond. Made sure it was the most beautiful and amazing day possible. And for that, above and beyond tipping happened. You know, it was like, I cannot emphasize enough, like, how much we are getting out of doing these things that we would have normally done for ourselves. And if your time is worth money, then their time is worth money. Well, so that's an investment.
All right. Well, we actually have a listener who heard Azalea on a different show I did about seven years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He was working at a place that actually gave discounts for customers who brought guns in. And she was okay. She was okay with that. But I would not want to undertip somebody who's packing heat. And because the customers were armed and ready, you were wearing a gun, weren't you?
Yes.
How was that experience?
Well, at the end of the day, if someone wants to come into a place and shoot it up, then at least you got some other people who are prepared to shoot them back.
Yeah, but
that's how I looked at it. And then if I saw somebody come in and put a gun towards my employee's face, I'm right here.
Well, fortunately, that doesn't happen a lot.
But, thank God it didn't happen.
Yeah, but Rodnina, I'm sure, especially late nights at Louis, you've run into a character or two along the way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I know.
Yeah.
No.
We have some very interesting clientele. Most of them were hilarious and lovely and very appreciative and generous.
People
but
like me.
Every once in a while, you'd get an angry drunk, unlike you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you, Rodnina Hart. Thank you, Azalea Miller. And please be sure to tip your servers.
Thank you, Jim.
First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support until tomorrow. For Alondra Villarreal, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Stay tuned.